Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Oh, another one. Day two of Canadian God. Spies are boring.
Hey.
We're still here.
Yay. Hi, Reese.
Remember in Wafakak, everything nearly fell apart because we were just exhausted and tired in 25 days. Well, hopefully that won't happen because this is less than half the length, but we'll see. We'll see.
How are you?
I'm still alive. I have all of my limbs.
That's always a bonus.
And as far as I
you
can tell...
You do live in the woods, so...
Yeah, as far as I can tell, all of my... I still have my faculties and my marbles, so...
What are faculties?
I don't know. I don't even know if I said that right.
You want some ASMR? Here, listen closely.
No, just going to open a can of untitled fizzy water. I've never seen someone struggle to open a can so much.
It's just doing it slowly. Here, listen.
Imagine a drunk man with no fingers trying to open a can. That's what Jesse looks like opening a can.
I was supposed to just do some ASMR of me slowly drinking, and it turned into me coughing and choking on it because he made me laugh.
Just way more entertaining.
A drunk man with no fingers trying to open a can. What, which is like his feet or his stubby nubs? Just Jesus Christ.
Stubby nubs. There's a name for a kid. If you're looking for a name for a kid, if you're having a child
stubby
being
nubs.
Bored. Yeah, stubby nubs.
Stubby nubs. And your last name has to be Flubberlubs. Snubbinubs, Flubberlubs. Poor kid.
Make sure to change your last name.
I'm sorry, if you've got a child called Snubbinubs, or your last name is Flubbidubs, we're really sorry.
Sorry at all. Are you kidding me? That's amazing. If your name is Snubbinubs, Flubbidubs, call us right away. We'll have you on the show. Okay? Just.
All right, spy me.
You're going to like this episode.
Am I?
Yes.
Am I?
Yes.
Okay.
Just the title. I'm actually rewriting the title while I'm talking to you.
Okay.
This title.
I'm holding you because I know we've been doing this for like a year and a bit now, and I'm holding you to make this shit more interesting.
Get ready for this. James Bond was Canadian. It's the name of this title of this episode.
James Bond is fictional.
James Bond was Canadian.
It's a fictional man.
That's not a documentary.
What?
It's not a documentary.
What's not a documentary?
James Bond.
No, it's a fictional...
It's Jurassic Park, not a documentary.
Oh, we have to have a talk.
I know he's a fictional character. I know he's a fictional. I'm not going to give you any more information. You have to listen now and pay attention.
For fuck's sake.
Your ears open.
My what?
Ears.
No,
my ears. Got your ears open.
My ear holes.
Anyway, you know, we did the whole thing with the Fenians.
Yes, the Ferengi.
The secret police. By the time World War II started, Canada didn't really have any spies again.
What happened to them all?
Well, there were no threats, so they didn't bother spending money on spies.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then World War I broke out.
Right.
And they had like a few like soldiers who would sneak behind enemy lines, but nothing in the sense of a spy. So Canada enjoyed no genuine intelligence system when World War I broke out.
I don't know if the word would be enjoyed. Like...
I don't know. Just saying. I think the CIA are having a lot of fun.
Fair enough. They might actually be having a lot of fun just yet.
So because of World War I, obviously they had to do stuff and think about it. So what happened was there was a...
What are you doing?
There was a German campaign of sabotage run by the German military attaché in Washington. His name was Captain Franz von Papen.
Oh, my God. Say that again.
I am Captain Franz von Papen.
Now, can you say it with like...
Military attaché. he actually served as a cabinet minister for Hitler later on.
Papen
served? Franz von Papen.
I'm just going to call him Papen. Papen worked for Hitler?
Papen Smurf.
Papen...
So childish.
Well, this is the same Papen that worked for Hitler is now a Smurf, is what you're saying?
Well, he was older, so. So he tried.
Papa Smurf, who's that over there in the field? That's von Papen, Smurf. Don't talk to him, child.
So Papen abused his diplomatic immunity.
So was Papen Canadian?
No, Papen was German, based in America.
Based in America, who then worked for Hitler.
Yeah, but before that, he was still in America during World War One. It was 1914. America wasn't in the war, but Canada was part of the British efforts.
Okay.
So Papen started organizing plans to invade Canada and a campaign of sabotage against canals, bridges, and railroads. And in 1916, he attempted a bomb attack on a Canadian railway bridge during the main on the main border. And nothing happened. So that was kind of
that's fucking anticlimactic.
So that was kind of it for spies during World War One. But
well, what happened? Nothing happened.
But something amazing happened.
Hold on, can we go back to the I plan on blowing up a bunch of canals and bridges and then nothing happened?
It didn't work. It fizzled out.
Like all right.
So it's Papen was shit basically. But Hitler obviously wanted to employ him for some reason. Maybe he was just hateful but terrible at spying. So
he was a spy
very
for,
good at hating.
He was a spy for Hitler.
Hitler was not in power then. It was
That's World War II.
So it was World War One.
World War
later on after World War One.
Thank you.
Later on in history. That's the thing about history.
Two comes after one.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So time works in a linear way.
Depending on who you talk to.
Like
a wibbly wobbly.
What shape do you think time is?
It's kind of like a wibbly wobbly timey wimey ball of timey stuff.
I think it's shaped like a slinky. That's as far as I got. So I haven't got an equation.
So Papen was a spy for who?
For the German Empire.
In the States.
He was based in the States.
Attacking Canada.
He was planning to attack Canada. He didn't. It failed. And Canada had to improvise intelligence services because they didn't have any at the start of World War
One. Right. All over again.
They were terribly unprepared.
Okay.
So, but what did happen during World War One was a man named Sir William Samuel Stevenson.
Oh my, what a fucking mouthful.
So he basically became the real
life. What's his name again?
Sir William Samuel Stevenson.
Wow.
He fought during World War One and eventually then went on to become a spy master in World War Two, and was the inspiration for James Bond.
Really?
Yeah. So, Ian Fleming, who wrote
and
came up with James Bond, said, James Bond is a highly romanticized version of a true spy. The real thing is William Stevenson. So,
wow.
So Stevenson was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
wow.
So James Bond is in Manitoba.
Our favorite place that we've never been to.
William Stevenson. I can't wait for our homecoming in Manitoba. Ticker tape parades.
With three people.
The three people. One of them's asleep on their floor. They'll even push our car over the border once we break down. So his mother was Icelandic. His father was Scottish, but he was actually adopted by another Icelandic family because his parents couldn't care for him. I don't know why, but they couldn't. And he left school at a young age.
Or didn't?
Just couldn't.
Oh, okay.
And he left school at a young age and worked as a telegrapher in World War One. So he left school to join up for World War One. And he was then essentially recruited into the Royal Flying Corps, which was a very early Air Force.
Cool.
When planes were still like made out of string and canvas. So he was flying the Sopwith Camel biplane.
The what?
The Sopwith Camel biplane.
Who the fuck is coming up with these names for planes?
I don't know, but it's, I like it.
The Sopwith Camel?
It's a great name for a plane. It sounds so slow. The Sopwith Camel sounds like the world's most obese species of camel. So...
Sorry, I'm just picturing a super fat camel right now.
To stop with. It died out because it couldn't run away from anything. Meanwhile, what do we call this plane?
What are those planes in the back that keep getting shot down? We haven't named those ones yet.
So essentially, it was like the very first version of Top Gun. He became an ace pilot flying this terrible plane. He scored 12 victories, so he shot 12 other planes down before another flying ace, a German pilot called Justus Grassmann, shot him out of the sky, and he was crashed behind enemy lines on the 28th of July, 1918. And he was captured and held as a prisoner of war until the end of the war.
Fun.
Apparently, he escaped. I read somewhere he escaped. I read somewhere he didn't. I think he probably tried to escape. I mean, he was the inspiration for James Bond, so let's assume he escaped.
That's a good assumption.
To a party.
Right.
Let them catch him so we could sleep the hangover off.
Okay. We make the history, so yeah, let's...
Exactly.
Let's just say that's what happened.
This is official now.
Yeah.
Just write that down. Oh, golly, Jesse. I've got some great news. We've had a fresh delivery from the ad man. Gee whiz, Reese. Really? From the ad man? Smell them. They're fresh. Oh, ads. He'd won a load of medals. And this is what the citation for his medals said. For conspicuous, this is so like old fashioned language.
This is on the medal.
This was the citation given why he had a medal. So, for conspicuous gallantry and devotion to duty, when flying low and observing an open staff car on the road, he attacked it with such success it was later seen lying in the ditch upside down. Well done. During the same flight, he caused a stampede among some enemy transport horses on a road. Previous to this, he had destroyed a hostile scout in a two-seater plane. His work had been of the highest order, and he has shown the greatest courage and energy in engaging every kind of target. That was in the London Gazette.
Oh, well, that's right.
There we go. It's good paper. It's
lovely prose.
So he returned to Manitoba at the end of World War One.
Okay.
His friend Wilf Russell started a hardware business.
Wilf?
Wilf Russell.
Wilf.
I had an uncle called Wilf.
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 W-I-L-F.
No, yeah, I could spell.
Wilf.
Wilf.
I don't know why that name sticks in your throat so badly.
Wilf.
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 Do you know why he started his hardware business?
Who, Wilf?
No, well, Wilf and Stevenson.
No, I don't know.
Wilf and Will.
Wilf.
He was inspired by a can opener that he had taken from a prisoner of war.
Okay.
So I like the look of this can opener. Let's start a hardware business in Manitoba. And the business was unsuccessful.
Of course.
However,
it's nothing but can openers.
However, he rapidly then made a shit ton of money in many other industries. He was very successful in business.
Oh.
So he became wealthy. He married a tobacco heiress. She inherited a lot of money from a tobacco company.
Right.
Mary French Simmons of Springfield, Tennessee. So
when do we get to the spy part, though?
Well, this is it, though. He patented a system for transmitting... he invented a system for transmitting photographic images via wireless that produced a £100,000 a year royalties.
Hold on, for
18. He just invented this, some cool stuff.
Say that again. What did he invent?
A system for transmitting photographic images wirelessly.
In 19 what?
This was in the 1920s.
You're shitting me.
And the royalties were about 12 million.
Do you remember in the 1990s
on your
baud modem trying to download an image to your computer?
Well, he did it with radio. So he was very smart, even though the tin opener thing
didn't
work.
How long was that? That's amazing.
And his royalties
gave... Was it binary? Like, what did he use? That's incredible.
I have no idea. No idea. You should look into it.
I mean, it's your job.
You do the science show.
Does he name... But what's the... fascinating.
That made him $12 million a year in royalties from the patent because he licensed it.
Wow.
If you adjusted it to current money. So, and then he started making radios with the General Radio Company, aircraft, pressed steel, which made car bodies for the British motor industry, construction, cement, and Shepperton Studios, which was the largest film studios in the world outside of Hollywood.
Wow.
So essentially, he then just set up a shit ton of businesses, which meant he had businesses all around the world and was traveling all around the world, had contacts around the world. So he'd had this insane military experience. Then he built a global empire, which meant he traveled all the time and built these contacts. So when Hitler... started to build up, illegally build up his military against all the international laws at the time. Stevenson was aware of it because he was selling steel and knew what was going on. So he started to tell Winston Churchill, who wasn't prime minister at the time, he was just an MP, and started to feed information to Winston Churchill and basically say, I know what he's up to. He's going to launch a war. He's building tanks. He's building this. The British didn't know about this, but this independent spy who was a self-financed businessman.
But he wasn't a spy at the time.
He was just a businessman.
He was just doing it for himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Or doing it for the good of his country. I guess he wasn't getting paid to be a spy.
No, and he never got paid to be a spy. He did all of his spying for free because he made so much money off his businesses. So this idea of James Bond having money and being in nice hotels and nice clothes came from William Stevenson, who was a self-financing spy.
So he spied for like the fun of it?
I think
did the government like kind of talk to him like, hey, can you do more of this? Like,
well, that was it. So he was giving information to Winston Churchill about Hitler and the Nazis. Churchill... was one of the few voices at the time who was fighting appeasement. So Neville Chamberlain, the British Prime Minister, didn't want to repeat World War I, understandably, and wanted to make concessions to Hitler just to keep him quiet and to stop there being a war. Winston Churchill was seen as a troublemaker because he was going, no, it's a trick. We need to fight him. We need to build the armies up. We don't listen to him, because he was being fed information from William Stevenson.
Oh, wow.
And then when Hitler follow through on those plans, invaded Poland, Neville Chamberlain resigned, and Winston Churchill was like, well, I was the only one who was warning you about this. He became prime minister.
Oh, wow.
So after World War II, then, basically Stevenson then became the center of British intelligence, really, again, in World War II. But what Winston Churchill did was send him to America, because America wasn't part of the war effort at the time. They wanted to stay neutral. So they established the British Security Coordination, or BSC, in New York City. And this was a year before the US entered the war. And it was under cover of a British passport office. But it was actually, his directives were to investigate enemy activities, institute security measures against sabotage to British property, and to organize American public opinion in favor of aid to Britain. And it directly influenced the US media at the time, because he was well connected.
Wow.
And his unofficial mission was to create a British intelligence network all through America and Canada. And he worked, again, like I said, he worked without salary, and he even hired...
Well, he had enough money. I don't think he needed more money. He was probably doing
He was doing it for the fun of it. But also then he hired out of his own pocket Canadian women to organize... to staff his organization, and he covered a lot of the expense of the office rental and their salaries.
Wow.
So he built a team out of his own
pocket. So not only did he not get paid, but he paid to be a spy. Like
he paid other people to come in and be spies with him.
Because like he wanted to have a club.
That was it. He wanted to have a very elaborate high-stakes club.
I mean, you know, when you're that rich and that powerful, what else are you going to do, you know? Like,
so
we start off as like a 10-year-old with a clubhouse. We end up in our 50s, a billionaire with a clubhouse. Come on, like it's full circle.
So Stevenson then was really good friends with FDR because of he had all the connections. He was suave. He could hang out in cocktail parties and just be friends with presidents because that's what he did.
Right, his clubhouse.
And he even helped William J. Wild Bill Donovan set up the Office of Strategic Services, which became the CIA. So he had played a big role in helping establish the CIA and the American Secret Service.
Wow.
But one of the things he did was set up Camp X, which was the unofficial name.
That doesn't sound very pleasant.
Of the secret special training school number 103, which is iconic as being the first ever camp dedicated to training the world's like best spies.
Oh, cool. Okay. So it's not like a war camp then.
That's no. He set up this
like
camp.
Nothing essentially like Camp 20.
No, it's not Camp 20. Camp X is like Camp 20. If everyone who goes there is being trained to really be good at really good at killing people and blowing things up.
Can you imagine?
But so after World War II, after all this, he was living in a 5-star hotel in New York, and then he bought his own home and retired to Bermuda. Got lots of awards and kind of lived until the 80s.
What a life.
I know.
Oh, my God.
But the next episode, we're going to talk about
Camp. He was born in the 1800s?
Yeah, late 1800s.
Wow.
So he lived a long,
long, healthy, happy, prosperous,
yeah,
incredible.
And got to watch a load of Bond films.
That he knew he was. Did he know that?
He knew that he was the inspiration for, yeah. Because the guy who wrote, actually.
James Fleming, yeah.
Yeah, he actually was.
Was it James?
He went to camp.
Jim Fleming?
He was a spy himself, so he knew Stevenson.
Hold on, what?
It was all based on.
Hold on. Who? Ian Fleming, not James Fleming. Ian Fleming. And you're saying Ian Fleming went to Camp X with
Well, he worked. He based it on his experiences.
So why didn't he base it on his own experience?
Because he wasn't as exciting as the other person. Yeah,
okay, fair enough. That's amazing.
Yeah. So the next episode is going to be all about Camp X, which was in Canada and was the world's number one spy training camp.
There you go, people. The first time in a year and a half, we give you a preview of the next episode.
Well, I thought it tied in nicely.
Now you have to come back.
I thought it tied in nicely from the last story. So if you want to hear the terrible things that... I'm joking. I mean, the things they taught them were crazy. So
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I've got some good stories, actually. Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, so tomorrow, this is the call to action. Come back and learn about Camp X.
Don't Google. Our call to action has to be something other than please come back. like a whiny please come back.
All right, please come back or we'll find you.
No, that's not a call to action. That's a threat.
Okay.
We can't do that. And your go-to
we might find you.
Check our Instagram. That's not a good one.
Don't go to Instagram. I tell you what, don't go to LinkedIn. Mm. That's boring.
No, that's boring. Who does LinkedIn anymore? Come on now.
I did sync up the Facebook to the Instagram, so we're posting on Facebook now.
Who the hell go? I know. Nobody cares.
Grannies.
About Facebook. Like,
grannies. And,
don't offend grannies. Grannies are lovely.
And
delicious cookies.
Grannies and Pappens.
Pappens. Yeah. Pappen Smurf.
Racists, grannies, and Pappens. That's what Facebook's
not
called.
Not racist grannies.
No, racist and grannies.
Oh. So,
call to action. Don't Google Camp X. Wait till tomorrow for us to teach you. Come back tomorrow, please.
Okay, thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yay. Fun.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th, at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.